society, always be aware of your surroundings. They are among us. They always have been. The true criminal minds, killers, evil, and some are monsters. Welcome to True Criminal Minds with Douglas Boyd. True Criminal Minds gives you the stories of the most notorious and the most vile among us. We do not cheer them. Rather, we expose their evil. We do always advocate, lift up, and pray for their victims. Welcome to True Criminal Minds. Welcome to True Criminal Minds. This is your host, Douglas Boyd. Thank you so much for joining us today. We sure do appreciate it. Today we will be going back in time to March of 1932 to the home of Charles Lindbergh. Again, thank you so much for joining us. This is your host, Douglas Boyd. I'm so glad that you're with us as we delve into True Criminal Minds. Today we will look at the Charles Lindbergh Jr. kidnapping. Very controversial, and was at that time considered to be the trial of the century. On March the 1st, 1932, Charles Lindbergh Jr. was abducted from his second story nursery at the family's home near New Jersey. The child's nurse reported that the baby was missing at 10 p.m. A search was made and a ransom note for $50,000 was found in the windowsill. The New Jersey State Police soon took control of the investigation, and during the search of the scene, mud was found in the room where the baby slept. There was also a ladder outside the window, but no prints were found. Immediately, household and estate employees were questioned and investigated. Charles Lindbergh asked friends to attempt communications with the kidnappers, and they made appeals to start negotiations. Strangely, a second ransom note was received by the Lindberghs on March the 6th, 5 days after the kidnapping. The letter was postmarked March the 4th from Brooklyn, New York. The ransom was now moved from $50,000 to $70,000. On March the 8th, a third ransom note was sent to the Lindbergh's attorney. Then on the 9th, another ransom note. At 8 p.m., March the 12th, Dr. John Condon, who was the go-between for the Lindberghs, received a fifth ransom note delivered by a taxicab driver who said a stranger gave it to him. This note stated that a sixth note would be found beneath a stone at a stand by the subway station. Dr. Condon found the note with instructions to meet an unidentified man who referred to himself as John at Woodlawn Cemetery. You know, this is something straight out of a mystery movie. You're going to meet with the kidnapper or someone associated with the kidnapper in the middle of the night at a cemetery. Just crazy to me. And I believe that Charles Lindbergh was in the car waiting, if I'm not mistaken. They discussed payment and ransom money. Dr. Condon asked for something to prove that the baby was okay. On March 16th, the baby's sleeping clothes were sent to Dr. Condon. On March the 21st, an unprecedented eighth note was sent to Condon insisting on complete compliance. A tenth ransom note was sent on April the 1st, 1932, instructing Condon to have the ransom ready the following night. On April the 2nd, an unidentified taxicab driver sent another note who said he had received it from an unknown man. Then there was a 12th note. Unbelievable. This, just when I read this and when I study this case and the mysterious notes and the man in the cemetery, the man in the cemetery didn't have his face hidden. Why would you allow someone to see your face. None of it makes sense. And why would you just keep sending notes? Because we're going to find out later that this poor baby was already dead. So why keep up this facade and this craziness and these notes and meeting in cemeteries? And after following the instructions, Condon again met with the man believed to be, they called him John. $50,000 was handed to the stranger in exchange for a 13th note stating that the child would be on a boat named Nellie near Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. The following day, a search was made of Martha's Vineyard to no avail. Dr. Condon was positive he would recognize John if the opportunity presented itself. Tragically, on May the 12th, 1932, the body of the kidnapped child was found. Charles Lindbergh Jr. was found partially buried and badly decomposed just 4.5 miles from the Lindbergh home, just 45 feet from the highway near Mount Rose, New Jersey. The discovery was made by a one William Allen, an assistant truck driver. The baby's head was crushed and there was a hole in the skull, and various body members were missing. The coroner's exam showed that the baby was dead for almost 2 months and that death was caused by a blow to the head. For the next 2 years, there would be an investigation. On June the 10th, 1932, Violet Sharp, a waitress for the Lindbergh's mother, who had been under investigation, now think about that, she had been under investigation, committed suicide before she was to be questioned. Odd, isn't it? Odd indeed. It should be noted that the ransom bills were clearly recorded. Frequent contact with bank officials were made. Now, examination of the ransom notes showed that the notes were written by the same person. But what about John? Dr. Condon described him as a Scandinavian-looking individual, and he believed that he could indeed identify the man if he saw him again. Police then took another look at the ladder used in the kidnapping. It was crudely built, but built by someone probably familiar with wood. Now to the bills. As more and more of them began to come in at various locations, it was marked on a map where they would show up at, and eventually a description of the man passing the bills came in, and it fit that of John. Oddly, most of the money was passed at produce stores. Eventually, an alert store clerk wrote the plate number down of a man who used some of the ransom money. His name was Bruno Hauptmann. Hauptmann was a German carpenter. And on the night of September the 19th, 1934, he was positively identified as the man who gave Joseph Perrone the ransom note number 5. Very soon after, he was identified by Dr. Condon as John, the character he had been dealing with, and the character that he saw at the cemetery. In October 1934, Hauptmann was indicted on murder charges. The trial started in January of 1935, and most evidence was circumstantial, but there was plenty of it. Tool marks on the ladder matched Hauptmann's tools. He had used ransom money and even admitted doing so. Wood in the ladder matched wood used in his flooring and in his attic. But far more damning, Dr. Condon's phone number and address were found written on a door frame inside a closet. Also, the handwriting seemed to be a very close match. And then finally, the most damning evidence, $14,000 in ransom money, was found in a tin can in Hauptmann's garage. It was concealed by lumber and shellac. On February the 13th, 1935, the jury came back with a guilty verdict, and the penalty would be death. On April the 3rd, 1936, Bruno Richard Hauptmann was electrocuted for the murder of Charles Lindbergh Jr. Seems pretty open and shut, doesn't it? Oh, but it's not. Over the years, there have been several who believe that Bruno Richard Hauptmann was framed. He never confessed, and in fact, was offered the opportunity to have his sentence commuted to life if he would confess, and he refused. He never confessed, and he went to his grave proclaiming his innocence. We have to wonder, did the state execute an innocent man? His wife also maintained that he was innocent. Some have maintained that the attorney general at that time was corrupt and they wanted a quick verdict and a quick execution. And there are a lot of things in this case that absolutely just do not make sense. Go back to that Lindbergh maid, the one who supposedly committed suicide before being interviewed again. Was she working in cahoots with the real kidnappers? Why would she kill herself before being interviewed? What was it about being interviewed that had that kind of an effect on her? Very mysterious indeed. Very mysterious indeed. The 28-year-old woman died from ingesting cyanide poison. There were even more stories over the years that maybe even Charles Lindbergh himself perjured himself during the trial when he said that at the cemetery he heard the man's voice, John. He heard his voice, and at the trial he said it was the same voice as that of Hauptmann. There are rumors that Lindbergh perjured himself. Is that true? I don't know. But I know many things. When you read the entire trial transcripts and study the case, there are a lot of things that don't add up. Did the state execute an innocent man? We will never know. Was justice served to a cold-blooded killer, or were we all just hoodwinked the day that they executed Richard Hauptmann? It is a mystery we will never know the answer to. Thank you so much for joining us today on True Criminal Minds. Join us next time as we look at another fascinating case and delve into the criminal element of True Criminal Minds. If you enjoy this podcast, please tell your friends about it. Please subscribe to it and be part of our podcast group. Thank you so much for joining us.